WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And on to Andrew Sullivan of The Atlantic magazine, who writes the prominent political blog The Daily Dish. His books include Same-Sex Marriage, Pro and Con, and The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back. Hi, Andrew. Welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, always great to be here.
And we'll talk Sotomayor and Prop 8, but oddly tying the two together today is the federal lawsuit for marriage equality filed by the attorneys from both sides in Bush versus Gore, Ted Olson and David Boies. Here is Olson on CNN with Larry King last night.
We wanted to send a message, Larry, to the American people and to the courts that this isn't a Republican or a Democrat issue. It's not a liberal or conservative issue. The right of individuals committed to one another to live in a stable, committed, loving relationship is something that we should all respect and be for.
So, Andrew Sullivan, this seems to be taking many same-sex marriage advocates by surprise. Ted Olson in the camp. How about you?
I'm flummoxed, gobsmacked, and also listening to that statement, extremely encouraged in many ways. I mean, I've long believed that this is essentially also a conservative argument to allow couples to get married. I mean, after all, conservatives have historically supported fidelity, responsibility, equal citizenship, equal opportunity, and giving gay couples for the first time a real structure legally, civilly, socially, to live our lives and to have goals in our relationships and respect for our relationships is surely a very conservative thing. And that Ted Olson has now come on board and other Republicans around the country and conservatives around the country, including, you know, Massachusetts and Maine and New Hampshire and New York State, are moving in this direction is, to my mind, extremely belated but extremely welcome. Whether the wisdom of this particular suit has been correctly judged is another question, but the symbolism of this, Olson is, you know, he's pretty hardcore Republican.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know the name, he's the iconic right-wing constitutional lawyer who argues the conservative side of all kinds of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, which makes this case even more eye-popping to me because marriage has always been governed by the state,
right,
by the states. So where do they find a federal right anyway? Do you understand it yet?
I think they're making an argument, and I haven't seen their, you know, the full argument that they're planning to make via the Constitution, but I think they're trying to make an argument that you cannot separate out a whole class of people for different and lower standards of treatment anywhere in America under the federal Constitution. Now, with respect to marriage rights, or in this particular instance, with respect to the distinction between full legal civil unions and the word marriage, I'm not sure the Supreme Court is at any stage and state ready to be challenged on this. And I know that many gay groups are actually very concerned that this is a premature lawsuit that may not work.
In other words, given the makeup of the Supreme Court, if you bring a case that you're likely to lose at this high a level this early, you may be defeating your chances of getting there through other means. Is that it?
Well, I think that is definitely how many people in the gay rights leadership feel about this, many of the groups that have been very carefully strategizing. Now, for my part, I think, as you said, that marriage, civil marriage, is and always has been a state issue, and I believe it should remain a state issue, and I think it should be decided by state legislatures governors and state courts. And I think the process that California has gone through has actually been, even though I found last year's ruling, a vote, terribly distressing, I think it's been a healthy process. I think it's allowed the court to have its say and to make its arguments. I think that the public debate has been enriched by this. And I, frankly, want to win this at the ballot box in California, not challenge this in the courts. I think we can win. We are progressively making gains in voting. And obviously the next generation is on board. I don't want to do something premature and rash that will put that progress in doubt and also suggest that we're interested in changing the entire country at once as opposed to working state by state with legislatures and courts.
Andrew Sullivan from The Atlantic and his blog The Daily Dish with us here on WNYC. Do you think that this will present a new challenge for President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Sonia Sotomayor? Will she now be parsed, in addition to everything she's already being parsed for her positions on gay marriage at a federal, as a federal right?
Absolutely she will. I think that was going to happen regardless of whether a federal lawsuit was filed, because we're told that the religious right has decided that, in fact, marriage equality will be the critical litmus test now, not abortion, with respect to their scrutiny of potential Supreme Court justice nominees. So I think it was coming anyway, and I think, frankly, that she can very easily deflect it. I don't think this is anywhere near a federal level at this point, although this suit does raise that specter.
She could just say, oh, this is not anything that's come before me. I would have to look at a case once it was presented and the facts of the case, right?
It gives them a specific suit to refer to ask her to respond to, and
right.
It gives her something to avoid. I mean, we know what this process is about. I mean, the hearings are not going to actually get her to say things substantively on these issues, but they will be used to gin up base support on both sides over various hot-button issues.
Yeah.
What I find interesting about Sotomayor, actually, is that it's a kind of really great test of whether Obama is the sort of Valium for our culture wars, whether he is actually slowly grinding down the hysteria and slowly lowering the temperature on these questions, which is obviously what he wants to do.
So what do you think about the Sotomayor hot-button quote, at least it's being billed as a hot-button and used as a hot-button, from 2001 that has Newt Gingrich calling for her to drop out already, that she would hope a wise Latina with her rich experience would come to a better conclusion on the law than a white male who hasn't lived that life. What's your own reaction to that?
Well, my own personal reaction to that sounded a little smug to me when I read it just as that simple sentence. But when I actually read the entire context of that remark, it's clear, in fact, that that's a bit of a misleading, believe it or not, out of context quote.
Mm-hmm.
That you see that, in fact, what she's arguing for and has argued for is that it would be naive to believe that that one's personal life experience or heritage has no impact upon the way one interacts with the law or with the Constitution or any particular case. And that in those circumstances, with a particular instance like that, she would hope that perspective, when dealing with that kind of experience in life, might actually make a better judgment. But she said that her job is to try and resist that as well, and to resist her own prejudices and resist her own identity
right.
as a force in the law. So her statement was much more nuanced than they're using. But of course, we know that. That's what they try and do. They try and get it out of context or reduce a complex position to a rather crude one. I frankly think that the way Gingrich has responded to it and the way Tancredo has responded to it by directly calling her a racist
yes.
Takes the level of debate to a very, very polarized corner right immediately. And I frankly think...
And shallow.
It's shallow, but it's also kind of offensive because even if you disagree, and I think I'd probably be more to the right than she is in terms of understanding how you approach the law. I think one should really try and repress one's own identity and experiences. But look, She has a slightly different philosophy, and we can debate about that. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean she's an active racist or a bigot. And when Tancredo and Gingrich are attacking the first Latina candidate for, you know, the Supreme Court on the basis that she's a racist, and also there's a subtext that she's not smart enough, then I think the political and cultural ramifications for the Republicans are terrible. I think it makes them look awful, and I think it makes them look unserious, really, about engaging the real issues of her record.
I guess there is a deep question here, which is, would a wise Latina, and she said wise Latina, not any Latina, would a wise Latina likely have more of an understanding of the world based on her life experiences in the U.S. than the average white man? I mean, you could ask the same question as a gay immigrant to the United States. With somebody with those collections of experiences have just kind of a broader way of looking at things on average than somebody who has not had those extra factors in their life.
I think that's, when put like that, it seems like a truism, doesn't it? I mean, it's really not that controversial a statement.
Right.
The way I see it is that if you've never experienced being powerless, you know, really powerless in the face of the law or a corporation or the government as an individual, if you've never felt that as a judge, it's hard for you to understand the impact of your decision sometimes on ordinary people. And I think insofar as having that experience, not coming from a place where she'd never felt, for example, discriminated against or never felt up against it or never felt slightly worried about the police or never felt slightly worried about the criminal justice system, I think those feelings that you can remember can help make your rulings more humane at times. At least they can add that dimension to it. I don't think that's, you know, essential in a justice, but I do think it's what the president was looking for. And I'm one of these people that believes that, look, he won the election. He gets to pick his Supreme Court nominee. And if she isn't unqualified, and I don't frankly think anybody can seriously say she's not qualified, then deal with it and treat her with a certain amount of respect.
We've just got about 2 minutes left. Andrew Sullivan, my guest from The Atlantic magazine, and he writes the prominent political blog, The Daily Dish. For them, you have changed at various times in your public life, for people who know you, from Bush supporter to Bush critic, conservative who was a bete noire for liberals to a kind of conservative apostate who wrote your book, The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back. How do you see your own conservatism today, a few months into the Obama era, if you see yourself that way at all?
I still do think of myself as the same. I roughly have the same positions I've had for my entire grown-up life. It's just that the world's changed a lot. I think the kind of conservatism that I still cling to, a kind of northeastern republicanism, as it were, the old kind of Yankee republicanism, which is, I mean, I'm very worried about the debt right now. I do believe in restraining government. I don't believe in an overpowering executive. I do think we should take some issues, some efforts to change the climate, prevent the worst happening. Those kind of things, I think, are real. I think a lot of people feel them. A lot of people feel like they're almost homeless on the right. I think Obama is trying to tell us that we have a place in the Democratic Party, and I think no one in the Republican Party is telling us we're welcome there. And I think, frankly, I'm happy to be outside those parties, but still consider myself a small government conservative that wants to give this new president a chance to prove himself. And I think there's a lot of us like that, actually, out there. And I think Ted Olson might be among them.
Andrew Sullivan, his books include Same-Sex Marriage, Pro and Con, The Conservative Soul, How We Lost It, How to Get It Back, and others. He blogs The Daily Dish for The Atlantic magazine at theatlantic.com. Andrew, it is always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Anirvan Banerjee next. Stay with us.